What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to The Syndicate. I believe this is episode 9. I have my friend J.K. Molina, founder of Tweet Hunter. He is a writer on Twitter, and he's coming up on about 100,000 followers soon. And he's somebody that I remember following in the space for, I want to say, about a year, year and a half, just seeing his stuff. And I remember when we first interacted, I think you had about a third or half of the following that you have now. And I just want to say, man, like, your software is great. You're a cool guy. You and I met in Austin, Texas. We had a good time. The first time that I met you, I didn't know it was you because I was in the bathroom and I was getting changed because I just gotten off the flight. And you walked in. I'm like, who the fuck is this dude? I'm like, all right, cool. And we literally went to the club, and like, I feel like you didn't know it was me, and then I didn't know it was you because we had never seen each other, but we had been talking like for a couple months, like over Telegram and like some other things, and we'd been talking, and like, I really just didn't know it was you. And I remember me and Ricardo were standing on the table at the club, and I turned around, I said, Ricardo, who is that? And he goes, yo, that's J.K. Molina. And I was like, and I turned around and we were both hammered. And I turned around and I'm like, no fucking way.
Dude, I knew it was you. Because I've seen some of the signs, right? But then like walking through the night, I'm like, dude, like we've been talking for a month. Is this guy not fucking like me or something? Like, what's going on? It's just like at the club, oh, you're Jacob. Oh, okay, so that was going on. But I was like half drunk anyway. I don't.
I mean,
it was a good night though.
You gave me some great recommendations when I was down in Mexico. Just, you know, you're a cool guy and you have a really cool story as well. So we'll get into a little bit of it. I know we probably don't have as much time as, you know, we'd hope to have. But, yeah, I mean, so you're still down in Austin, Texas right now, which, you know, hopefully you're having a good time. And what's funny about Austin is, like, it's like L.A. and, like, New York or, like, you know, the suburbs had a baby. And I think I heard Luke and Nett say this on Twitter, but it was like, it's like the Hamptons in Los Angeles had a baby and that's Austin, Texas. So I enjoyed Austin when I was there. It's a pretty interesting sized city. Second. But, you know, and for the listeners, sorry, we're both outside right now. And if you guys hear homeless people yelling in the street, you know, please excuse me. So I think it's very interesting because when I think of you, I think of a guy that has created a life for himself through geo arbitrage, right? And you are from Guatemala, right?
Yep. Yes, sir.
You make money in the United States. You have a pretty sick fucking software that I use and a lot of people and a lot of our friends use. And you're building really cool things. So I wanted to just ask, like, for the listeners who don't really know who you are, because I think you reach more people in different spaces than I do, because our content is quite different. What kind of got you into this? Like, what kind of got you into writing? What got you into starting software companies? Like, why did you start this in the first place? Like, coming for, like, just a kid from Guatemala.
Yeah. So it all started with Twitter. Like, when COVID hit 2020, you know, everybody gets locked down and I'm just like, depressed, right? Because I'm like, I can't do anything. I'm in college. I'm like junior in college or whatever, and I can't do anything. So I just start going down the Twitter rabbit hole, right?
Yeah.
And like back home, I was not making any like good money at all. And I was seeing these guys, like just regular dudes with, they don't even show their face, dude. Like you don't even show your face, right? So they're, yeah. They're like making fucking 50K, 100K, 200K a month. And I'm looking at it and it just didn't make sense. So I'm like, okay, I'll buy it. I'll see what's up. Maybe this isn't a scam. Turns out it wasn't a scam, right?
Yeah.
And these guys are just doing digital marketing for other people. I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. And then I just kept tweeting about the most random shit, just the most random shit. Like nothing in particular, kind of seeing where it was going, getting a couple likes. And then this guy, Lawrence King on Twitter, he just posted about how Gillette, you know, the razor company,
yeah,
they have like 150,000 followers and they get like 3 likes per post. Like it's actually embarrassing, like how bad they do. Yeah. And he said, dude, like if a multi-billion dollar company pays someone 80K to do this job, how much would it pay you if you could do it like a shitty job.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. So I started writing for other people, started charging them. And so my, like, just seeing what could happen, because like the great thing about Twitter, and we're the living proof of it, is that like, Twitter's not so much like a social media app, it's much a networking platform, you know? So yeah. The value of growing a Twitter audience, I learned that early, was that it's not so much about the likes and comments, it's about like who you're gonna meet.
Yeah.
And if you could be that catalyst for people who meeting other people that can make the money, they'll pay you whatever you want.
Yep.
So I understood that early on. Started writing for people, just growing an audience around ghostwriting and teaching people how to do it. And then this was a stroke of luck. Like TweetHunter was luck. So I didn't start TweetHunter. So what TweetHunter was built like around May. I got involved in August. This is 2021. But these guys already had something built. Thibaut and Thomas, they're from France. And they said, dude, like, you want to check out this software? It's pretty cool. Here's a free code. You want to try it? And then I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, these guys have like no audience. They have like no customers, but their product's incredible.
Yeah.
Michael, I can put two and two together and do this thing. So, okay, you know what? Give me equity. I'll become your marketing guy and I'll just push it. And then we'll start this. So TweetHunter wasn't my idea. It was already built by somebody else. But that's kind of how it started going. Like, honestly, just out of luck. Like, everything just happened because of luck. And sometimes I'm tempted, you know, especially in the Twitter sphere when there are a lot of people flexing and shit, to be like, yeah, like, I did this, everything. I made this on my own. Like, nah, it was luck. Like, there's a lot of luck involved in everything. So pretty grateful to be in that position.
You know, what's interesting about what you just said is even though you, and this is a Grant Cardone thing, but it's interesting that you said that, because you came in, you saw an opportunity and you used your following and you leveraged your following and you knew exactly what to do, how to drive revenue, how to get more customers. And you started putting money in the bank account of the business, which not only are you a very good partner for that, but that's something that is so out of your realm of ghostwriting and Twitter and everything like that. But you understand the market, you understand the product, and you understand the use case. So you're able to come in and add value to a company that's already existing. And you guys are probably going to sell for high seven figures, maybe eight figures, if you guys want to stay in that business, which is cool, because you guys, I think you posted a screenshot, you guys are like 60K MRR or something for that. It's like, it's insane. And it's been around. And I remember when you started pushing it, it's like, what, 8 months, 6 months, something crazy.
Yeah, around 8 months.
So it's just like, I always use the word testament, but it's crazy what you guys were able to do in that time, leveraging the platform and then figuring out how to spin it and how to put it in the hands of guys like me, guys like, you know, Ricardo and our friends that we have, that we've made, you know. So what are you working on now? So is it mainly TweetHunter? Are you still doing the ghostwriting thing? Are you still, you know, doing those other things? Or are you mainly solely focused on that?
Yeah, I'm probably doing too many things and I shouldn't, but I'm doing the ghostwriting. I'm doing the TweetHunter, but honestly, like, the TweetHunter comes easily in a way, because kind of when you are your own target market, you don't really have to think about what the market wants. You have to think about what you want. You know, you have your cash flow syndicate thing going on. Like, you are in the trenches. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, you close the sale or you miss the sale. You don't really need to dig around and fight content. Like, content's already in your head. You just have to write it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of an unfair advantage that you have when you are your own target market. Everything kind of like falls into place because you know exactly what to build for yourself.
Yeah. It's literally, you're building things that you would use. And because you have a platform and you have the leverage, all you have to do is just put it in the hands of the people that follow you and the people that you're in your network, and everything kind of becomes not instantly successful, but there's a high chance that it is going to become successful, which is very interesting. Something that you talked about, and I want to talk about Twitter a little bit, because Twitter is a psychological game. And the reason I say that is because, I put something out, and every time I do something that's very egotistical, like, usually I'll have a couple drinks and I'll just spout something and it'll be very egotistical, which is funny because I understand the psychology of the common person. Right. I understand psychology of the masses. And the reason that a company like Gillette gets three likes is because they do nothing controversial, right? Their biggest controversy in the last couple of years was like that ad that came out that like was disrespectful against guys, right? Or something was like, you know, toxic masculinity or something. When all they had to do was, all Gillette had to do was say, you're not going to get any girls if you don't use our razors. And like the psychology, like, so, and I just spoke with Ricardo about this on FaceTime a little earlier, like the same way that you sell a product or the same way that you motivate or train a salesperson, people are motivated by a couple of things. They're motivated by vision, dreams, right? Their dreams, your company's vision. And if you can tie in their dreams to the vision, you can get them, you can understand who they are and you can have them work for you, right? Also, people are motivated by ego and shame, right? So if you shame someone, it triggers a negative reaction. And if you appeal to someone's ego, it triggers a positive reaction. And so Twitter and the way that a lot of people grow, especially how I've grown very fast, is you appeal to both sides, right? And I think in order to do well and elevate yourself, especially on Twitter, you have to be controversial, and you have to elicit a negative reaction from people, and also have to elicit positive reactions, right? And you do that by things like high value content that is positive and communities like mine and good products and high quality services and engagement and positive things. And also controversial, like whatever I put out is like, you know, there's a picture of me and a girl, and everyone got, and like I woke up to like 300 quote tweets, right?
So I saw that picture. Was it the I'm taller than you, I'm better looking than you, I'm richer than you, I'm everything better than you? Was that, is that the one?
I think I just put what was it? I said I get girls you would never get the chance to talk to, and I make your yearly salary in a month. And like I knew, I was sitting at the bar last night, I'm sitting there with the girl, and I'm sitting there, I said, I think I'm gonna put something out egotistical in my head. Like in my head, I'm like, okay, I think I'm gonna see it sound really egotistical. And it popped off, of course, because I understand there's a plane going over there. I understand the psychology, and I knew that it would make people mad. Of course, people are gonna be like, oh, fuck you. Oh, this guy's an asshole. Oh, okay, but who cares? It's engagement. I got like 200-300 followers overnight.
Yeah.
Like the worst thing to happen is I'm going to mute the conversation and I'm just going to keep it pushing. And then for the next 3 days, there's going to be people hating under my tweets and quote tweeting my thing. And I'm just going to get more engagement.
You are in a specific position because like if you're in corporate, if you're a 9-to-5, you absolutely cannot do that. Like it's like they're going to catch your profile and then you're fucked. But because you're half anonymous and you know, like your income stream does not depend on Twitter. Like if Twitter got shut down, you would still have your own thing going on. You're in a position to do that. And you can pull it off. I don't think I could pull that one off. But hey, if it's your unfair advantage, you can use it, right? Okay. But I do agree that you do need to elicit some sort of emotion. And if you don't really cause emotion, then it's like you get caught in the loop, because you know how everybody has like shitty attention spans. Mm-hmm. Now it's not enough to like catch attention. You always have to catch emotion as well. So that's one. I actually play on the opposite side of what you do in a good way, right? So you play in the side of like, you couldn't be like this. I play in the side of we're all like this. So instead of like if we were in the same situation, right, you would have tweeted that, but I would have tweeted something around that. The entrepreneurial urge to work 6 days a week and be an absolute degenerate for one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing played with opposite angles, but yeah, it's still emotion, you know?
Yeah. Which I think is very interesting, because that literally shows me. So my thing is, and you'll probably agree with me here, is my thing is to elicit emotion in a way that the people, so to be incredibly polarizing, right? And if I can be incredibly polarizing, yeah, there's going to be a lot of people that don't like what I put out, but the people that do like what I put out resonate stronger with it. So I'd rather go, I could probably put out sales content and talk about business and entrepreneurship and tweet platitudes and do sales. Here's how you sell this. Here's how you do that. Here's how you do this. And I could have 30,000, 40,000 followers, right? But I don't want to, because I don't want to seem one-sided, and because I'm not a one-sided person. And I think dynamism, the ability to create a dynamic where the people that follow you resonate not only with your message, but who you are and the personal brand in the brand overall that you've created. You can get somebody who likes you for sales content to like something else, right? Or the lifestyle content, or this, that. And there's a bunch of different things of the way you go about it, where you create a flywheel, where one thing that you do can integrate somebody with the other thing that you do. And I think that's interesting, but it has less mass market appeal than speaking or talking about one thing.
I do understand that. It's not my approach, but I can see how, like, and I don't know how to say this nicely, but like, one follower of yours would be way more dedicated than five followers of mine, you know? So it's still like a different plane. It's like what, margins versus volume in a way, and applied to audience.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's just a different game. It's just a different game. And I do believe that you can play a little bit of both. And the best example of this for me, it's, you know, Black Hat Wizard.
Of course.
Coldy the Wizard, the boy. Shout out, Coldy the Wizard, great course. So cold email, which does it great, because he talks every time about cold email. But every once in a while, he'll show you like a Bible quote. Every once in a while, he'll just complain about the IRS and certain people and just be like outright offensive with others. Dan, but he'll still do that.
Dan knows what he's doing. And Dan is a very good friend of mine. And he, you know, we always hang out when I'm in Miami. Very good friend of mine. And he knows the game. Right. There's a couple guys in this space. Obviously, you're one of them with what you've built. There's Dan. There's like, you know, there's a lot of the bigger guys, like obviously like me and Mason, where we understand the game. Right. And I think Twitter, especially, right. My following originally, I grew from some lifestyle content and just kind of a couple of sales threads. Right. My first like 1,000 followers. But when you understand the game, you understand that you have to build credibility in different ways. And Twitter especially is a platform where we're able to build that credibility in so many different ways, right? So you have the ability to do video content, right? And Twitter pushes video content like crazy. Video content, you have written word, obviously. You have humor and you have actionable advice. And then you also have things like spaces where you can speak with your followers on a one-to-one or one-to-many scale. And all of that allows you to create it's a platform now that is not only used for networking, but it is, I think Twitter, the word I can use for it, it's just an idea off the top of my head, is it's a credibility platform where you're able to build massive amounts of credibility, massive amounts of social proof in a very short period of time on one platform, which you can use as a distribution channel for everything else that you want to do, right? And I hope a lot of people listen to this and they get on Twitter, because it is probably the best platform for networking and personal branding in the world, because you're able to do so many things in one space, and it's TikTok reach with LinkedIn engagement.
That's good. Okay, that's good. I like that. And there's that, and there's also access. Like, you know that one of the richest dudes like online is Taylor Welch. He has his DMs open. You could just be like, yo, Taylor, what font are you using? Oh, you're Tennessee? Oh, shit, I'm in Tennessee too. You know, like, dude, I moved in with Dan, Dakota, and Devon. We've never met before. But I'd be like, guys, I need a place to stay. Yeah. Like, hey, you know, we got a couch. I'm like, all right, fuck it. I'm staying on the couch. Right, there you go. I met David on Twitter. Everything's just, everybody is there. And when people, especially on Twitter, they say like, oh, I'm not here to make money. Well, you gotta be here for some reason, right? If you're not here to make money, at least get the connections out of it. So if you're listening to this and you're not on Twitter, just realize like it only takes one connection to change everything. Like, absolutely. Even if you're broke, you're not doing anything, there's clients, there are people willing to pay you. If you're already rich and you're already successful, there's someone, at least one dude with like two followers and a profile pic of a dog that'll help you move. And that's already like owns 500 Bitcoin. And he's the one guy that'll change your life. They're all lurking. They're there. They're there. And it's actually like, it's actually inspiring sometimes because people will tell me, especially on the communities and then the growth, like, dude, I'm not growing. I'm not doing anything. But yeah, but keep showing up because at every point, you're only one away. Bro, you're only one good tweet away.
I couldn't agree more, man. Like, I remember I was drunk in Naxos, Greece, and I had a hand-rolled cigarette that a girl had rolled for me and a drink. And I think I was drinking vodka Red Bull, of course, my go-to. And it was like 7 a.m., right? And I was like, heavy booze, heavy smoke, and models, the only way to live life. And Ricardo quote-tweeted and said, yo, this guy's living life, right? You go follow him. And I got my first 400 followers overnight. And I looked at it, I was like, yo, 400 people fuck with me. And I had like, and I lurked on Twitter for like almost two and a half years. And I was like, yo, holy shit. I was like, we might have something here. And so I was like, you know, and I had looked at guys and I did a podcast with Ty and I told him this on the podcast. I looked at guys like Ty, I looked at a couple of like sales guys who were like giving out sales information. I'm like, yo, I know a lot more than a lot of these people about how to do the things. And I was like, you know what, let's see. And I saw what worked and I saw how people grew and I understood. And I saw people come and go, FA, like Apollo, all these people come and go. And I remember all of like the drama and I'm just like, okay, well, I know not what not to do, but I do know what to do, right? Obviously the Tate Star Wars tweet, like, understood the system of how to do the things that I reverse engineered the system, right? And like, when I got on, I was like, okay, now we got something. And within that couple week span, I think it was about a month, I was traveling and I just documented, you know, me traveling, talked shit and posted, you know, high value content. I got like my first like 1,000 followers overnight. And I remember when I got back to the States and I was like, you know, and my friend had asked me, he was like, you know, how are you going to keep this going? Like, how are you going to keep people entertained? I was like, honestly, bro, like, I don't know. I'm just going to keep doing my thing. And then Spaces came out and I was able to give, you know, live advice and I grew, it was like 200-300 followers a day, me and Mason, and me and him grew together. And then by 2000 followers the next month in October, we started Cashflow Syndicate and then we were off to the races. And Hassan, you know, Hassan, obviously, Hassan came out in to visit me for a week in LA. And he was the second person that I met from Twitter. Obviously the first was Ricardo, but he was the second person that I met from Twitter and he came out and me and him both had like 3,000 followers. We were like neck and neck and we were like, yo, let's see where we're going to be in 4 or 5 months from now. I said, I think we can hit 10,000 apiece. And we did. And all we did was just like, yo, how do we create more attention around the things that we're doing? Right. And that's especially with Twitter. It's like, you know, if you use it as a distribution channel, like you, like JK, like you and I do, all we do is have to, how do we create attention in positive and negative ways and get people to resonate with our message. And it's just now it's just an attention game. But we sat
like
there.
I was just going to say that. I like that you do exactly what I think the right audience hack is. If you want to, like, if you want to be someone on Twitter, you got to be someone outside of Twitter. You got to be living a good stuff going on. Yeah. So if you see writers, for example, like Roosevelt, right? He was a writer. He was also the president. But he used to fight. He used to hunt. He used to do all these things.
Yeah.
Like Hemingway used to hunt. Bukowski, he used to be like Casanova. He just go talk to girls, right? Yeah. Because when you do a lot of things outside, then kind of content resolves on its own. So people ask, what do I talk about? Well, just go do stuff. And then go do incredible things at night, every day. And then at night, take like 30 minutes to like report what you did, talk about what you did. Something happened. And it's that when you're growing a business and when you're already busy doing your own stuff, content sells itself. And there's not really any pressure in what you need to write. It's actually like very refreshing because you kind of understand something. Let's say you close the sale, right? And then you're like, you feel good. You close the sale, good shit, or you missed the sale. But you know what caused it, but you also don't know until you actually write it and actually reflect on it why it happened. Yeah. And then you write it. So you can see it, it's this like beautiful process that your audience learns at the same time as you. And I had this in my bio a while ago. I took it out because it was too long, but I was like, writer, and then some other things, and then figuring it out. Because that's literally us. We're all just figuring it out. So if you don't know what to talk about, you're listening to this, just go do cool shit, you know?
Yeah.
Just build businesses, and it eventually it'll sort itself out. That's it.
Yeah, and you have to, genuinely, you have to live a good life, right? There are some people who grow who talk about one thing. There's one guy that I really don't like. I'm not going to say his name. But he talks about one thing, and it's just platitudes. And like, I came after him. I called him a nerd because he said, I have 8 different softwares that I use to make my cold calls easier. Like, bro, you pick up the phone and you say, hello, do you want this thing? No. Okay. Then you call the next person, say, hello, do you want this thing? You don't need 8 different softwares. You need a phone and a pen and paper or a Google spreadsheet, and you can build an entire business. People, I think, and this gets me to my point, is like, you know, you have to live a good life, but you also can't overcomplicate life. And you have to be the type of person that just like is living. And I think for the listeners, right, and it's a lot of people who, you know, maybe just starting out or anything like that. And there's definitely a lot of advanced guys as well who enjoy the show. But if you're not a person that's like going out and living life and like has these experiences, like the reason why like you and I can talk about the things that we talk about and some of the other guys that we know can do and talk about the things we do is because we're actually genuinely living it. And we do live pretty good lives, right? Like we can go here, we can go there, we can enjoy this, do that. And we document it because we have a platform, but I would be doing those things anyway, right? When I had 80 followers on Twitter, I was talking shit into an echo chamber for like 2 months and I was just running around and spending a bunch of money and living a good life, right? And then finally something popped. But I would go as far as to say, like, you don't even need to document it. But if you want to be the type of person that, you know, a lot of people, I'm not sure if people look up to us, maybe they do, maybe they don't, but it's inspiring to live a good life. And if you want to be an inspirational person, I think you need to live an inspiring life. What are your thoughts on that?
Just do more, bro. Just train everything. Just do more. That's actually some of the best. That's the best advice I've got from Twitter. It's the train everything mindset, and it was incredible. Because the other night we went out, I'm looking at it and I'm like, I'm looking around the room. It's like, okay, it's Ricardo, it's Dan, it's David, and it's like, damn, like all these dudes, they can fight, they can pull girls, they can make money. They can write shit online. They can do everything. And so it was just fucking amazing. It was just really, really fucking amazing. Like I was actually grateful to be in that. That's another good reason, like, to be on Twitter. Everybody's competent.
Yes.
Everybody's competent at everything. And it's so I, the other day, the other night, so I'm with this guy, David, right? I'm like, he built an audience around, obviously, like, sales and stuff, and I was going out with this girl. I'm like, yo, David, come here real quick, and I asked for advice. I'm like, dude, the guy I met on Twitter like 30 minutes ago that talks about sales is giving me girl advice, and it fucking works. So it's like, what? It's
just a good thing. I remember that we were at the bar and in Austin,
yeah, you know,
whatever it was, that dive bar,
which by the way, I can confirm, these guys do not stand in line. They just go right through the bar. Like, I can confirm. Yeah, fuck, yes. Standing in line. I understood that. So yeah, I was actually pumped because I was like, okay, let me see how these guys play. Because I met Andre Heikel on Miami. And I asked him, like, yo, how was it going out with these guys, with Ricardo and David? And dude, like, I could see on his face the look of a hurt man. Like, he was hurt. And I was like, what happened? He's like, dude, it's crazy. Like, be careful when you go out with those two motherfuckers. Like, just be careful. I'm like, okay, I'll be careful. And yeah, I had to be careful.
And Andre, I did a podcast with Andre yesterday. So he was on the most recent episode of the show. And he was his birthday in Miami when I met him, and I didn't realize it was him. It was one of those situations. I didn't realize it was him. So I asked Dan, told him it was him. I'm like, Dan, I said, who is that? He goes, yo, that's Andre. I said, no way. I go, Andre. So it turns out it was his birthday, and I got him shit-faced. I got him shit-faced on his birthday, which is great. Andre is a great dude. But, you know, and especially, like, you know, when I've spoken about this before, but, like, I always, like, when I was a kid, like, I wanted to play music, and I wanted to be, like, a rock star, and I wanted to, like, have, like, that rock star lifestyle. And what's really cool about what we do now is I do that, but I don't even have to go on tour and play music.
I like that. You just have to tweet. Oh,
no, well, you gotta run these businesses, you gotta go to the club, you gotta have a good time, and you gotta live a very visceral experience that is life. And the more that we do that, the more life that we're gonna live, and the less we're gonna have regrets, right? Like, no one ever regrets I went to the gym, like, oh, I don't want to go to the gym, and then they go to the gym, they have a great workout, or they, oh, I don't want to call this client, I don't want to, you know, believe this client because they haven't paid the invoice, and then they call them and they get paid. Or I don't want to go to the club, and then you go to the club and you meet a beautiful girl, or you have a great time with your friends. And especially, like, going out, right? Like, well, like, going out, right, with your friends and people that you like and people that you care about, it's like, you know, that creates brotherhood and it creates camaraderie. And those are the moments where we all kind of get together and it's like, yo, like, we really did this. Like, we really, really, like, we did this. Like, we are all doing this. We did this. And it creates beautiful moments. So, yeah.
Did you play team sports in school?
Yeah, yeah. So, I was
the – It's kind of like that, huh?
Yeah, I was the captain. I played lacrosse in high school. I was the captain of the team. I played sports. But what I wanted to say quickly is, you know, be careful coming – if you guys ever meet us or come out with us, be careful, because – you're absolutely going to get drunk and you're absolutely going to have a great time. Be careful. You might be inspired.
That's the esoteric tip they don't talk about. Go to the club, spend a lot of money, and then that'll inspire you to make more money. Yeah. That's what they don't teach you at Harvard Business School, bro. They don't teach you that shit.
That's all you need to know about business.
Yeah. Yeah. And about the life thing, right? So the reason why I came to Austin from Guatemala is that I wanted like better competition. Like, I can't have these conversations with some of my friends back home. There's a group in which we were tightly knit, right? But you know, I wanted to go to a place where I'm at a cafe and the guy next to me is like a multimillionaire. I wanted to go to a gym where everybody's fitter than me. I wanted to go somewhere everybody's happier, like, well, everybody just does more than me. And, yeah. You know, it's like, you get to that point, actually, and one of the main reasons I did this, and this is a fun thing, I want to experiment this with you, because we're going to talk about a topic that you're an expert at, which is women. So, you know how when you want to get girls in the beginning, you're just starting out and you're like, okay, I'm going to get rich and fit. I'm going to get fucking rich and jacked. And then you get rich and jacked. But then the only attention you attract is from other dudes.
Yeah,
they'll be telling you, like, dude, you're looking good, bro. You're looking swole, right? Yeah. Like, girls don't even bat an eye. But I think I came to the conclusion why that happens, and I want to talk about this with you. And it's that men are attracted to outer work, but yes, women are attracted to inner work, right? Which is, in a way, which is why you hear more. When you hear more men say stuff like, oh, like, she has an ugly personality, but I'd fuck her. But you hear more women say stuff like, oh, he's ugly, but I kind of like him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So,
but I forgot why I got to this point, but I was just going to say that about living life, I just figured out that after getting all that and getting to a point in my business, I figured out that the best way to go about life and the true measurement was not the money, and it was not exactly happiness, because happiness is hard to measure, yeah, but the depth of the relationships that you have. How much can you connect with other people? And that's really the ROI. But anyway, yeah, out of everything, that's a tangent.
You know, let's talk about, we're going to talk about girls for a second. So when you start out getting girls, right? Like, you have to be, so you have to be doing both, right? You absolutely have to be doing both. But I tell everybody who asks me questions, right? How do I become, how do I get girls? How do I do this? Like, dude, you start out going to the gym, you start out becoming more confident, you start out dressing better, you start out building businesses and making more money. And the thing is all of those things create confidence. And women are attracted to confident guys, right? Women naturally want to be protected. They want to feel safe and they want to know that their man can provide and take care of them, right? And I'm not saying that, oh, like alpha, oh, yeah, you can just fuck a girl and leave her and everything. Like, sure, you can do that, but you're not going to have high quality relationships with women. You're not going to have women that respect you, who are loyal to you, who are obedient to you, who want to see you succeed, who want to help you, who want to put you in the best position possible for you to go conquer the world. So you have to be the type of man who is competent, who is incredibly competent in every aspect, right? And I saw somebody comment on this thread that just popped off last night, or the tweet I just had that popped off last night. I got like 400 quote tweets or whatever. And they said, oh, she rolled with broke dudes before. Like, bro, who cares? I was dating NFL cheerleaders and very pretty girls, models, when I had $200 in my bank account, right? I've always been that dude. I've always been the guy. So now, well, money and fitness and competency, it increases, it amplifies you, right? And it increases your value as a man. Sure. Listen, bro, I would have got her if I had $200, bro. That's it. I would have, and she would be loyal and she would be obedient and she would do the same things that she's doing for me now if I was dead broke, because I've been that dude. And it might sound incredibly egotistical to say that, but as a man, you have to get to the point. And that's because when I was 18, 19, I started all and compounding all of the work that is required in order to do that, right? Money just came in the past 2 years, but for the past 3-4 years before that, I was already doing the inner work. I was already doing the outer work. I was already in shape. I was already able to talk to people, right? I was already smart, charismatic. I was able to do all of these things. So as a man, if you're a guy, right, you're a young kid, say you're 17, 18 years old, you're like, oh, I want to make all this money. And you think money is going to get girls. That is absolutely not true, right? Just having money, you can be a rich dork just as much as you can be a rich G. And it's important to be that type of person. And I think the world needs more type of men like that. Guys that are going to fight for what they believe in, who are confident, who are charismatic, who are competent in almost every realm of human existence. And if you want to get girls, right, you don't want to be one of these pickup dorks, right? You don't want to be out here and spam. I was at the Wharf in Miami one night, and I was with Kendall Shaw, a good friend of mine. And literally, like, there was these pickup dudes walking around, staling out, saying the same fucking lines to all the girls. And I remember thinking, I'm like, wow, like, things are so much different now because of the way I see the world, the way I perceive the world. If I say I go out and I want to talk to a girl, I talk to 3 to 5 girls a night. I don't talk to 50. I don't need to talk to 50. I walk up, I pick one. I say, hi, I say, excuse me, hi. I don't mean to bother you, but you're absolutely gorgeous. What's your name? You know, I don't mean to bother, like, and that's it. And it works. And it worked on the girl that I see right now. Because as a man, it's not fucking creepy if you're a 6'4", rich, handsome, charismatic, funny guy walking up, because she's in the club. She's at the bar to meet a man like you. I heard Tristan Tate says she is in the club to meet a guy like me. She's in the club to meet somebody who is like us, right? That being said, if you're a young kid, you have to do the work that elevates you to that level. And it doesn't come overnight. It takes years of hardship, years of rejection, years of heartbreak, all of that shit. So any guy who wants to start, there's a couple people that follow me on Instagram. I'm not going to, you know, put my Instagram out here, but there's a lot of people that follow me on Instagram from Twitter. And obviously you can scroll down my Twitter feed and see dime after dime after dime. The only reason I'm able to do that is because I am who I am and I did the work to become who I am, right? Any guy listening to this and you want to play at the level and that I play and some of our friends play, you have to do the work. And it's as simple as that. But you have to be the type of man who is putting themselves constantly in a position of challenge, obstacles, and struggle, because the more challenges, obstacles, and struggle that you go through, the higher quality of man you become. You become a resilient individual. You have high stress tolerance. And then you start running around. You're like, oh, I'm confident. Now I can make a bunch of money and I trust myself. And it comes from the belief system and the mental framework that no matter what happens, if you trust yourself enough, you will always be successful. And that's it.
I'll add one thing there. And it's kind of hard to draw the line where are you done, or where do you get to a certain level of competence when you've done enough work? And I watch a Hormozy video that I really like. If you're really putting in a lot of effort, then that's kind of doing all the work already. Because when you don't put in the effort, you feel it. And then it's heavy, and then it's bad. But when you really give it all you can give it, and then it can be 1 month, it can be 2 months. But then because of that effort, the quote about Hormozy that I really like is, effort is the universal currency of respect. So the work can be just as simple. You don't have to be fucking 50K a month entrepreneur, right? But you can be some dude that actually made last more this month than he made last month. That's already the work. That's already to a point where you're confident. So that's a caveat. Not everybody's handsome as fucking tall as you, dude. You're tall as fuck. But yeah, you can be confident, and that'll help you a lot. And one tip that I kind of developed for reading from your tweets and Goldie's tweets is that if you go to talk to a girl and you have the mindset up, it's not so much like, oh, will she reject me, or what should I say? You go to a girl and you deep down, you say to yourself, I'm going to bless this girl. You just go and you bless that girl. You talk best fucking mindset up. You say that to yourself, you always win.
Like, dude, like, and not only that. And so to answer your question, when is it enough? Number one, it's a two-part answer. Number one, it's never enough. And number two, if you do it, even if you think you might not be ready, right, or you feel as if you might not be ready, and you do it anyway, then you're brave and you're courageous, and that means you're ready to do it. And that's when the work, that's when you've put in all of the work necessary, because you are scared, but you do it anyway. And that's when you're ready.
You still get scared?
Well, I got scared. What do I got to be scared about?
I know, but like, yeah, I feel like,
you know.
So we all get scared sometimes, but you do it anyway. So I was just wondering, when do you get scared?
That's a good question, JK.
I still get iffy in some sales calls, I'll be honest with you. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know about this guy.
I'm not. Okay, sales calls, I'm not scared one bit. Dude, I've woken up. Dude, I still do this sometimes, right? Like, I'll be hungover. I'll be absolutely just, I was partying the night before. I was at the club, whatever. And I'll wake up and I'll hit the sales call, whatever time it is, I'll hop on the sales call. And it's like I am 150,000% sharp, because I've done it so many times, it's second nature. Same thing with girls. It's like, you know, you've done it so many times, it's second nature. You don't need, like, you can be scared, but as long as nobody is trying to physically attack me or stab me in the throat with a knife or shoot me in the head, I'll be all right. I'm not really that scared, right? Unless my, like, and I've been through some things, but as long as my life is not in danger, I'm okay. So there's the worst possible thing, and this is something that you learn, is like the worst possible thing that happens is you get rejected, or they say no, or they just, you know, they give you a look and that's it. There's nothing that affects your life. It doesn't affect your life. It's like, and evolutionarily, we're trained in our brains, right, in our reptilian brains, to be scared, because back in, you know, primal times, if you talk to some dude's girl, he came up with a club and he beat you to death, right? That doesn't happen anymore. Some dudes, they will, right? But there's not really much to be scared about. And especially if I'm in another country, I make sure I peep the scene and I look around and I understand, okay, who is with who, who's not with who, or is that, you know, guy sitting in the corner looking like a mean motherfucker in the corner? Like, is that his girl? Like, but in life generally, like, the worst thing that happens is you get rejected. You feel like an idiot for 20 seconds and you move on, because it doesn't affect your life like that. And it's just not meant to be. So does that answer your question?
I guess so. I mean, All of your enemies are inside your head, really. They're not real. But if true danger is, especially when you do martial arts, you understand this. I recently started jiu-jitsu like a month ago. Dude, I was so calm. I thought I was going to be violent, you know? But I'm so calm because, like, you understand the reality of violence. People are trying to break you for, like, an hour and a half. Then it's like, you know what? I know how damaging this can be. Like, I'm not going to go fight a fucking rando in the street.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, martial arts has definitely been transformational in that way. But, I gotta leave soon, bro.
No problem, man. We can wrap it up here. I think this has been a great, you know, very quick, great conversation, man. I think there's going to be a lot of takeaways, and I think it's going to be very well received, especially across both of our followings, man. So everyone, thank you for listening, JK. I appreciate you being on, man. And this has been great. That was, I believe, episode 9, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
All right. Thank you, bro. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Take care.